Waukesha.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Steve Kathan. President Biden's son pleads not guilty to three federal gun charges in a Delaware court. Legal analyst Jessica Levinson says it sets up a possible strategy for Hunter Biden's lawyers.
I think they're going to argue that one of the statutes that he's charged under is unconstitutional, that it violates the Second Amendment. So we're going to have the son of the Democratic president of the United States, who's pushing for more gun control, arguing that a statute that says you cannot be in possession of a firearm if you're a known narcotic user actually violates the Second Amendment.
Donald Trump showed up for day two of his civil fraud trial in New York today, again attacking the state's attorney general.
At a minimum, she should start looking for the murderers and the criminals, the violent criminals all over New York. Do something about all of the illegal migrants pouring into our city and state.
The judge indicated today he's not backing the Trump view that most claims in the trial go back too far. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, his leadership under fire from far-right Republicans, facing a vote today that could push him out of the job.
If you throw a speaker out that has 99% of their conference, that kept government open and paid the troops, I think we're in a really bad place.
About a mile from the Capitol last night, a carjacking involving Congressman Henry Cuellar. WUSA TV reporter Jess Arnold.
Police said it was three men who ended up approaching the congressman. They demanded his car. Now, the chief of staff said that he was actually parking his vehicle when these men came up to him.
Cuellar is okay. His vehicle has since been recovered. A Michigan court has ruled on the case of the parents of a teenage school shooter who killed four classmates at Oxford High School back in 2021.
James and Jennifer Crumbly will go on trial for involuntary manslaughter. The state court of appeals said they could be held accountable for their son's actions. The judges cited text messages that Ethan sent his parents, saying he was experiencing paranoia and hallucinations. One judge noted that they still bought him a gun. Beth Fisher for CBS News, Detroit.
Well, CBS's Jim Crisula has the story of kids and a gun.
Police in Apopka, Florida, northwest of Orlando, have charged an 11-year-old boy with attempted murder after he allegedly shot two other juveniles. It happened during a Pop Warner football practice. Apopka Police Chief Mike McKinley.
Three juveniles got into an altercation. During that altercation, one of the juveniles went to a vehicle, retrieved a firearm, and fired one round that struck two other juveniles.
Both of the shooting victims are hospitalized and listed in stable condition.
And right now, the Dow is down 380. This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed, because Indeed's all-in-one hiring solution helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Find out what's going on in the world, the state,
and in your own backyard.
This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
It's 12:03. Good afternoon. I'm Terry Bell, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A Wisconsin man accused of murder has been found in New Mexico after driving away from a halfway house in Toma last week. Shane Helbrecht was found near Santa Fe and released to the Eau Claire County Sheriff's Department. Helbrecht was arrested in 2016 for the murder of his neighbor in Eau Claire, but he was found incompetent to stand trial. He was staying at a halfway house in Toma when authorities say Helbrecht took his parents' car and fled. In Wisconsin, you need a witness in order to fill out an absentee ballot. A liberal law firm is challenging that law. Nate Wegehout has more.
The Elias Law Group filed the lawsuit in federal court on Monday. They say the requirement to have a witness sign absentee ballot envelopes violates the Federal Voting Rights Act. The law firm says that requiring absentee voters to have a witness attest to their qualifications to vote violates that law. The lawsuit was filed on behalf of four Wisconsin voters who find it difficult to get a witness due to health risks, living alone, or traveling overseas. The lawsuit names the State Elections Commission and multiple city clerks from across the state as defendants. Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
Meanwhile, in the legislature, Democrats are proposing a package of 22 new bills to overhaul campaigns and elections. They're calling it the Safe and Sound Democracy Package. Senator Mark Spreitzer is from Beloit.
We need to set aside Trumpism and conspiracy theories move past that and get back to business. And that's what we're doing here today as Democrats by introducing and talking about a number of bill packages that would strengthen our democracy.
One of the Democratic bills would establish an Election Day holiday in Wisconsin. Another would require more public disclosure of campaign donors. Lawmakers are taking up several campaign election bills in committee today, including one to let absentee voters sign up to get text message notifications when clerks get their ballots. Republican Representative David Steffen.
In this way, the voter has some certainty, some confidence, a bit of security added to the process for their benefit. Is benefit of the system.
Many of the bills have bipartisan support. Steffen says he hopes they can become law in time for Wisconsin's spring nonpartisan elections. Cell phones, radios, and TVs will be buzzing tomorrow afternoon for a nationwide test of the Federal Emergency Alert System and wireless emergency alerts. Mike Moan reports.
Jared Tessman, the Emergency Management Coordinator in Monroe County, says the alert rollout will begin at 1:20 p.m. Central Time on October 4th. The purpose is to get people thinking about what would happen in a national emergency, but there's local significance too.
We can send the same tests out at a local level to notify people of evacuations that are necessary due to various types of disasters, hazardous materials incidents.
When these tests are conducted, he says it's important for people to have their phones on so they can confirm their device can receive such a message in a real emergency. I'm Mike Moen.
A growing number of young people report struggling with depression or anxiety. Much of it can be linked to social media. A new online tool for young people and their families can help. Marcy Timmerman is with Mental Health America.
I think one of the biggest early warning signs, especially related to social media use, is that they suddenly stop wanting to use it or they are on it all the time. There's an extreme change in their behavior and maybe their attitude as well toward the media platform.
In addition to social media, more young people report feeling distressed about mass shootings, climate change, and politics. The Brewers return to Major League Baseball's playoffs tonight. For the first time since 2021, they'll take on the Arizona Diamondbacks in a best-of-three series at American...
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. With demo plans released, there's still an ongoing dispute about who's paying for the teardown of the Horizons West condo building. The city of Waukesha had taken legal action against condo owners to make them pay the $1 million bill, leading to a settlement. A resolution states that if the condo owners get payment from the insurance company, they must direct the insurer to pay the city to cover the demo costs. However, the source of the funds hinges on the outcome of the condo's owners' appeal against their insurance company. There's a hearing happening today in federal court. A Brookfield middle school teacher has returned to work after being suspended for an anti-Semitic gesture and a remark made to students on September 21st. The school's principal informed parents about the incident, stating that while the teacher didn't intend harm, they did violate school policy. The district says corrective measures have been implemented following the suspension. After more than 3 years of delays, the trial for former Milwaukee police officer Michael Mattioli, accused of an off-duty chokehold death, is finally scheduled to start November 6th. The trial is expected to last 5 days. Waukesha police are investigating vandalism at the Waukesha Strong Memorial. Recently, the name Brandon Fox was spray-painted in one corner of the memorial. Although Brandon Fox was among the original creators of the mural, he hasn't been part of the project for several years. It's the second time his name has been spray-painted on the mural. Brandon Fox, when questioned by Fox 6, acknowledged that the situation is being addressed, but didn't confirm if he personally put his name on the memorial. Bob Uecker is on first pitch duties tonight. Traffic around the ballpark will be impacted due to playoff baseball in Milwaukee, with the team for sure playing again tomorrow, regardless of today's outcome. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
And now, your Wisconsin weather from Civic Media.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot with a look at your weather ahead. Is it midsummer or what? Sure feels like it. More record heat struck yesterday in La Crosse, Marquette, and Green Bay, marking 87 degrees into the books. With a hot temp sticking around again today, highs into the 80s put some of us in jeopardy of breaking record heat one more time. Under mostly sunny skies today and winds breezy out of the south, gusting up to 25 miles per hour, it's our last chance to soak up those those rays. Clouds will begin to push back in overnight tonight and bring light rain with them, targeting northwest Wisconsin after midnight and bringing scattered showers on and off throughout the rest of the state tomorrow. This is from a low pressure that will be sweeping a cold front across the state. And while it may not feel like fall now, fall foliage is popping in northern Wisconsin, now at peak colors in Forest, Langlade, Lincoln, Oneida, Burnett, and Barron counties. Have a terrific Tuesday, Wisconsin. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot, Civic Media News.
The Brewers lose one of their top pitchers. Good afternoon, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers begin their playoff series tonight against the Diamondbacks, but they won't have starting pitcher Brandon Woodruff. Manager Craig Counsell making the announcement.
Brandon Woodruff will be out for this series. He has a right shoulder capsular injury. We're working on a second opinion and for Brandon to see over the next couple days. Frankly, his availability for the postseason is up in the air at this point.
It's the same injury that kept Woodruff on the IL the first 4 months of the season. The 30-year-old right-hander asked how he's doing.
Not good. When you deal with an injury and then it pops back up, it popped up at the wrong time. But also maybe it's a blessing because I can, you know, have it taken care of. It sucks, man. We got a good clubhouse, and I want to be a part of that. And you know, sitting here now, I may not. So that's the hard part.
So it's game one of the best of three game series tonight at AmFam Field. First pitch at 6:08. Corbin Burns gets the start tonight and talked about facing Arizona.
They've been really, really good all year. They're really hot early on, but you know, it's all about who goes out and plays the best baseball. And I think the way we've been playing baseball the last month and a half, it doesn't matter who we're playing, what their record is. I think if we go out there and play the baseball we've been playing, we'll be in a good spot.
Elsewhere in baseball, another manager fired. The Angels will not bring back Phil Nevin after 1.5 seasons. The Giants fired Gabe Kapler. The Mets let go Buck Showalter. NBA, the Bucks training camp begins today. The team introduced point guard Damian Lillard, who talked about getting the phone call that informed him he'd been traded to the Bucks.
Just kind of sitting there in my man cave, I didn't really know what was going to happen. I started to think like, man, it might get to training camp and I might just be sitting and waiting, you know. And then I got that call from my agent. It was like, man, you're getting traded to Milwaukee.
Bucks owner Wes Edens on trading away Drew Holiday and Grayson Allen and the decision to fire head coach Mike Budenholzer.
The coaching change, you know, was made because we thought it was the right thing to the organization. The change, you know, to trade, you know, two very, very good basketball players for Damian Lillard, that's a big decision. We're just trying to do what we think we can to give ourselves the best chance to win championship.
Giannis Antetokounmpo says he's excited that Damian Lillard is joining the team, but was asked why he hasn't signed his contract extension yet.
Does not make sense for me to sign it right now. I gotta, you know, always look what's the best for me and my family and for my situation. But at the end of the day, like, I want to be a Milwaukee Buck for the rest of my career as long as we are winning.
NFL, the Packers play the Raiders in Vegas on Monday night. Left tackle David Bakhtiari is on 4-week IR because of his left knee injury. Will he play at all this season? Matt LaFleur.
Yeah, I'll let Dave comment on that. I know he wanted to talk to you guys later on, so I'll let him talk about his timeline.
That's Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Uh-oh, did a rock hit your windshield from that semi? Don't worry, Auto Glass Now offers fast, reliable, and convenient service. For a limited time only, Auto Glass Now is offering 50% off windshield replacement. Call your local Auto Glass Now today for full details.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Earl Ingram.
It's Wednesdays, that means Dr. Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action, is on the line and in full effect.
I think that the caller is right to be very suspicious. So we need to kind of hold both thoughts at once. Let's see if there's something there about Robin Voss being afraid and backing down, but let's be prepared for the idea this is all a ruse.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Did you know your favorite shows and hosts are active on social media too? Find Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook and be part of the conversation happening there. And go to our website, civicmedia.us, to learn more about the Civic Media Network.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. High of 85 this afternoon, under mainly clear skies, south winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 65 tonight, cloudy. Overcast skies again tomorrow, chance for scattered storms, high of 77. 72 Thursday, with a chance for scattered rain showers, 56 Friday, chance for showers continues. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 79 degrees.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
Joining us today, this is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will drive the talking points of the day. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789, or take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app. You can call, you can text, you can connect with Town Call. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Type in Civic Media. It's free and easy to download. Joined, as always, by Aaron on the ones and twos and a special guest host for the week, Mr. Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. Gentlemen, how are we doing this Tuesday afternoon?
Doing well. Thanks so much for having me back. I'm glad to be joining you all week here on Town Call.
Yeah, and I'm doing pretty well as well. Just was doing some editing on a podcast that Todd Alba and I are working on with former Congressman Scott Klug, Lost in the Middle. First few episodes are out now on lostmiddle.com.
Ooh, very fun. We'll have to check that out. And Dan, your joke made me kind of think about, can you imagine if this was like a daily tryout? Like every day was like, all right, how did Dan do? We sit here after the fact. I'm like criticizing everything that you said. Like, I guess we can bring you back again tomorrow. No, we have a lot of fun here. We're glad to have Dan joining us today. And Dan, I want to jump right into a story that you pointed out to me yesterday, but we didn't quite have the time to get to it as it was just rumors at that point. But Wisconsin Democrat Katrina Shanklin announcing her bid to unseat U.S. Representative Derek Van Orden. The Democratic legislator from central Wisconsin announced Tuesday she is running for U.S. Rep. Derek Van Orden's seat next year. State Rep. Katrina Shanklin of Stevens Point joins a crowded field of Democratic challengers in western Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. We have other candidates such as small business owner Rebecca Cook, former La Crosse County Board Chair Tara Johnson, and Harvard Law student Aaron Knights. Van Orden, who is a former Navy SEAL, narrowly defeated Democratic State Senator Brad Paff to flip the seat for the GOP last year after longtime Democratic incumbent Ron Kine chose not to seek re-election. Paff has decided not to challenge Van Orden in 2024, and this is going to be a very hotly contested seat, not just in Wisconsin, but at the national level. As the conversation we've had on Town Call in the past, a little bit more assistance in this race last year might have flipped the tides before Van Orden had even won that seat.
Yeah, this is one of probably the single most competitive congressional seat in the state of Wisconsin. So it is definitely one to watch. Obviously, longtime represented by Ron Kind, Democrat, flipped over to Derek Van Orden in the most recent election. And like you said, a big part of that was the lack of national investment from the DCCC, some of the other national groups that really didn't do anything to help Brad Paff in that race. And Van Orden
ignoring Wisconsin in a big national race. Where have we seen that before, Democrats?
Yeah. Not great. But I think, you know, what ended up happening, though, is that Paff did a much, much better in that race than a lot of people expected, even though he didn't have the support from the national party. And I think, you know, going into this next election cycle, as Democrats will try to take back the majority in the House of Representatives, I think this is going to be a really important race for that effort and for Wisconsin. And I think, Katrina Shanklin, we can get into some of her background as we discuss this, but I think that is just elevates the level to which this is going to be an important race for Democrats in 2024.
Mm-hmm. And to give some context to what you just said, Dan, this race did end up much, much closer than I think a lot of people were expecting. I got the final numbers right here. Van Orden, 164,600. Brad Paff, 152,900. So this was a 51.8, 48.15 election. This was only, you know, a 3-point race.
Yeah, and to be that close without the national investment, I think is, it just goes to show that, for one, Van Orden is vulnerable. I do think, you know, we've seen him put himself in the news in not so great light not too long ago, when the news was surfaced about him potentially drunkenly yelling at a bunch of teenage Senate pages in the Capitol. You know, he has kind of started to align himself with some of the far right members of the party. I saw a video with him and Marjorie Taylor Greene going around Twitter the other day. So,
let's not forget the famous image of him quite literally outside the Capitol during the Jan 6th insurrection.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, he's in his first term in Congress and making a name for himself in not some not so great light. So he's going to be vulnerable going into this. And Katrina Shanklin, she has been a assembly representative for about a decade, and she has, I think she could pose a pretty formidable challenge. And, you know, one thing that longtime recombobulation area readers will know is that I write a preview of every single race on the ballot in Wisconsin for the Wisconsin State Legislature. Yes, I'm the one guy crazy enough to write about all 100 and some seats that are happening.
Somebody's got to do it, Dan. It might as well be you.
Somebody's got to do it. So and there's not always that many competitive races. We know how deeply gerrymandered the Wisconsin State Legislature is, how polarized the state can often be. So a lot of those races are very one-sided, but Shanklin represents the Stevens Point and Portage County area in the 71st Assembly District. And, you know, her district was one that Republicans targeted in the last election cycle. They saw that seat was trending to the right, saw that it was, you know, potentially making it a little bit vulnerable on what was going to happen. But what ended up happening is she widened her margin of victory from 2020. She won by about an 11-point margin. 2022, she won by about a 15-point margin. And this is, you know, a part of the state that Joe Biden won in single digits in 2020. So I think that is a pretty significant track record. You know, she is somebody that has had roles in leadership within the Democratic Assembly Caucus. She served in joint finance for a time. She's been very active in a lot of water-related issues, environmental issues. We know Central Wisconsin has had a lot of issues with the PFAS and forever chemicals. She's been active in addressing those. So could, you know, there's obviously a number of candidates joining the race. Rebecca Cook has done a really good job in the early going fundraising and getting her name out there. She did well in the primary a couple of years ago as well. So I imagine it's going to be a competitive primary, but I do think Katrina Shanklin could really pose a serious challenge to Van Orden if she emerges from that primary. And I think this is going to be a candidacy to watch. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I will note that Shanklin has served in the state assembly for 10 years, and according to WSAW, has passed legislation during every session she has served under both Republican and Democratic governors. So, as you noted, this is somebody with experience. I want to also touch on something I found regarding the 2022 race between Brad Paff and Derek Van Orden. We talk about spending and the influx of money in elections, how so many elections across the country are determined by, you know, who raises the most money. And we talk about how surprisingly close this race was. I found a piece from Business Insider from last year talking about this race in particular. According to Open Secrets, Brad Paff raised $1.6 million, spent $1.5 million. Derek Van Orden raised more than $5.9 million and spent $5.4 million. So he outspent, or he outraised and outspent by Brad Paff by a very significant margin, and this was still only a 3-point race. It just goes to show, I guess, the failure on the part of National Democrats to not recognize how competitive this district would be. And again, shows how important this race will be going forward now that we have the benefit of hindsight. I think it's very likely, I agree with you completely, not only will this be the most competitive race in the state, but it's very likely to be one of the more competitive races in the country.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things you mentioned there, the lack of investment, I think that has effects up to the top of the ticket too. You know, the lack of investment in these congressional races, you talk about it in some other, you know, state legislative races, things like that. That can matter in the statewide races too. And I often wonder if Democrats had poured a little bit more into those races. You know, we saw a lot of focus on a number of those kind of swingy areas, Eau Claire, La Crosse in the spring election. Janet Protasiewicz, I believe, won this congressional district. You wonder if investing in those races a couple of years ago could have maybe tipped the scale for Mandela Barnes. That was an extremely close race. You know, could investing in those races matter to the top of the ticket as well? And so as Joe Biden is looking to win a tough re-election fight in a swing state, you know, Tammy Baldwin looking to running for re-election as well, investing in these other congressional races, especially swingy areas like we see in the 3rd congressional district, places like Eau Claire and La Crosse and Stevens Point, a number of Southwest Wisconsin counties that can go blue in some elections and red in others, that reverberates to the top of the ticket as well.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's just about getting your message out there. I see that when I'm organizing all the time too, and door knocking. If I'm going to areas that haven't heard from their representative in years and years and years, people are just excited to see that you care, right? They don't care what party you're from. They don't care necessarily. I mean, they do, but not to the same degree care what message you're pushing. They're just excited to have somebody willing to come to their door and say, what do you think? I want to hear from you. I want you to be able to participate, because fundamentally that's the point of a democracy, right? We the people are electing representatives that best serve our interests. In order to do that, you need to be able to hear from all of the people, and getting that message out, I think, really does matter top to bottom within the ticket itself, because you are showing that you care enough about these individuals' opinions to get out there and listen to them. If you have thoughts on the announcement, Representative Katrina Shanklin entering the race for Wisconsin's 3rd congressional district, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. Joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. We're going to talk about the averted government shutdown coming up after the break. A big story that broke over the weekend, obviously, as the September 30th deadline. It didn't really give us enough time to be flexible in that regard. We knew it was going to happen over the weekend. We just had to decide whether or not we were going to get to it yesterday. But there was so much news to cover, Dan, that it pushed us back a day. But we'll be dedicating the rest of the episode to that story, as I think it needs coverage. And as I said, somebody's got to talk about it. It might as well be us, right?
Absolutely. Looking forward to getting into it.
So thanks for joining us today, Dan. If you'd like to participate, again, you can call us, you can text us, or take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app. Connecting with Town Call, head on over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Type in Civic Media. It's free and it's easy to download, Dan. When's next year's full Senate and Assembly legislative piece slated to drop? You got started working on that yet?
I'm starting to take a look. You know, we've got a spring election too. That'll be a time to look at as we go into the fall as well.
Democracy's a verb, Dan, not a noun, and we got to be protecting it 24/7, 365. This is Town Call. Thanks for joining us today, Dan. We're going to be right back after the break, and we will be talking averted government shutdown. We'll be right back.
Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM. Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM. This is The Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News brief, a day in court for President Biden's son, Hunter.
When it came time to enter the plea, that was done by his attorney, Abby Lowell, who said Mr. Biden pleads not guilty to the 3 charges. And
CBS's Catherine Herridge says these are 3 federal gun charges pressed after a plea deal fell apart. as he headed into day two of the civil fraud trial that has him and his business empire in the spotlight. Former President Trump blasted New York's attorney general and said his defense is strong.
Because of the fraudulent numbers he's given, many of which, Mar-a-Lago is just one example. We have other examples that are almost as good, in some cases might even be better.
Speaker Kevin McCarthy facing a House vote today that could oust him from his job.
Make sure our military is still paid, our border agents are still paid. And if that makes a challenge based upon whether I should be speaker, I'll take that fight.
CBS News Brief. I'm Steve Kathan.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Wattles. The city of Waukesha may end up paying for the demolition of the Horizon West condo if the condo owners lose their appeal. There's a hearing happening in federal court today with condo owners in proceedings against their insurance company. There's still an ongoing dispute over who will pay for the teardown. The city of Waukesha had sued the condo owners in an attempt to force them to pay the $1 million bill, but the two sides reached a settlement this summer. That settlement says that if the condo owners get a payout from their insurance company, they must direct the insurer to pay the city to cover the demo costs. After more than 3 years of delays, the trial for former Milwaukee police officer Michael Mattioli, accused of an off-duty chokehold death, is finally scheduled to start November 6th. The trial is expected to last 5 days. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Wattles.
The Todd Alba Show.
You can't impeach someone before they've committed an alleged crime. Even principled conservatives are going to look at that action and say, come on, what's going on?
The Todd Alba Show.
Dan Knotel, Republican of Germantown, said he was moving forward to uphold his quote-unquote constitutional duty, which is a joke.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
It's the Wild West of how students are using generative AI.
As educators, there's sort of six responses that we can have to these new tools. We could ignore it. Mm-hmm. We could ban it. We can try and outfox it. We can teach about it. We can actually teach it, or we can teach with it. I think the most exciting one, of course, is to teach with it.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Direct from the Dairy State, it's Sharp Cheddar Weekends, a three-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. You can enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn thing. Sharp Cheddar Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media station or on the app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. Joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area today and tomorrow and Thursday. It's going to be a fun week. And I want to touch, Dan, on the government shutdown, the big story of the past weekend. Walk through the timeline a little bit just to kind of provide some context to the situation, how it went down, how it all happened. So as a 30,000-foot overview, essentially, the new fiscal year for the U.S. government began October 1st, and a funding bill had to be passed by then or the government would shut down. As we touched on a couple of weeks ago, explaining the how generally appropriations tend to function, how the 12 departments require their own funding, how this is usually done as a, one large bill that encompasses all of them, but how a certain subsect of Republican legislators didn't want that this year. They were pushing for each one to be funded individually. How that didn't occur. And now we are seeing the results. So let's start with the House of Representatives, as that was the biggest quote-unquote hurdle in this situation. And on Saturday, the House passed a 45-day funding bill meant to avoid the immediate, at least, government shutdown. The bill would keep the government open for another 45 days. With just hours to spare, House Republicans and Democrats struck a surprise deal to fund the government, averting a shutdown that would have inflicted economic pain on millions of American families. Now, the House voted on an overwhelming bipartisan basis, 335-91, for the short-term funding bill known as a continuing resolution. 209 Democrats and 126 Republicans voted yes, while 90 Republicans voted no. And according to NBC News, only one Democrat, Rep. Mike Quigley of Illinois, voted no over a lack of Ukraine aid. Speaker Kevin McCarthy, who has kind of been the face of this potential shutdown, was quoted as saying, "It was tough, but we got it through." The bill then, of course, had to head to the Senate, where lawmakers there said they would not object to a speedy vote. And they did not, as the Senate voted 88-9 on Saturday night to pass the short-term bill. The bill, which, of course, had passed the House earlier, keeps the government funded at existing levels through November 17th and authorizes additional disaster relief money, giving Congress more time to reach a full year funding agreement. Of course, that's still going to be a massive challenge ahead of the new November deadline. But as American politicians tend to do, that's a problem for a later day. We can deal with it when we need to deal with it. Dan, what are your thoughts on the Republicans taking this last minute essentially agreement? The Democrats put their cards on the table earlier, said, "We don't think the government should shut down. Here's our offer to you." Well, Republicans, particularly Kevin McCarthy, and being pushed by a lot of the more extreme members of the caucus, such as Matt Gaetz, wanted to cut funding across the board and refused to accept any deal that did not do this. Republicans recognize, or Republican leadership, I guess I should say, recognizing that they would not be able to pass any kind of continuing resolution without Democratic support, decided to negotiate with their Democratic colleagues, and this was the result. Is this acceptable? Should we be excited for this? Is this just kicking the can down the road? What are the next steps for us here?
Yeah, it seems like there's a pretty high likelihood that we'll be back here in another, you know, another 6 weeks, right? This really only extends the battle for another 45 days with the what passed over the weekend. You mentioned the House vote with only one Democrat voting against. We actually had two Wisconsin Republicans who voted against the bill that passed too. That was Tom Tiffany and Scott Fitzgerald, kind of, you know, pulling together the insurrection caucus in the state of Wisconsin.
Both birds those of guys a feather.
Voted to effectively overturn the election on January 6th a couple years ago now. And now, you know, joining forces yet again to try to, you know, I don't know, I guess, shut down the government. But it does certainly seem like we're going to be here in another 45 days, because it seems like the main issues were not sorted out. And it does not seem like Kevin McCarthy can keep his caucus together to vote in the same way on this or anything. I mean, Matt Gaetz yesterday floating, trying to remove McCarthy as speaker. You know, it's just all sorts of craziness happening on the Republican side of the aisle here.
Oh, and actually, Dan, he did. So as of last night, late Monday night, Matt Gaetz rose in the chamber as the House was almost done for the day to file the motion, a resolution that would set a snap vote in the coming days that even Gaetz acknowledged may not have enough support to remove the speaker from the job. But the motion was officially filed to oust Speaker Kevin McCarthy, potentially throwing the House into new turmoil. McCarthy, remember that it took him 15 votes to get confirmed as the speaker last, when they elected initially the House Speaker with the new session of Congress. I believe that was the most of all time by a pretty significant margin, because I recall making NFL-related jokes when he was like 0-14. I was like, wow, Kevin McCarthy is in line for the number one draft pick. I did some photo editing to Mel Kiper's big board from last year and swapped the Chicago Bears with Kevin McCarthy, which was, you know, too much fun for me. But this has been a challenge that we know was coming, in the sense that Gates and more of the and some of his allies have made it perfectly clear that they expect McCarthy to kind of cater to their will. They want to enforce some of the power that they have as a, I don't want to say moderately large, but impactful voting bloc in a very small Republican majority. Now, McCarthy evidently has had enough. He was quoted as saying, "Bring it on," today, when referring to Gates's motion and attempts to oust him as speaker. This is a story that I think, as it develops in the coming days and coming weeks, is going to gather pretty significant attention as well, because it appears that the very small Republican majority in the House is in disarray at this point.
Certainly seems that way. And, you know, between what Gates is doing and McCarthy's inability to really get everybody on the same page, it's such a departure from, yeah, I think, what we had seen previously in the House. You know, say what you will about Nancy Pelosi, but she was really good at organizing the Democratic caucus to get on the same page for these important votes, like, you know, baseline stuff like funding the government. So I think it's such a departure from what we had seen in the past. And before the shutdown was officially averted, you know, there was a really interesting Washington Post story that I read about this, with the headline that said, "Amid GOP confusion, U.S. braces for first ever shutdown about nothing." And it kind of went through the history of, you know, previous government shutdowns over the years, in the 90s, over spending cuts and a clash between the Clintons and the House Republicans and Newt Gingrich. In 2013, about a disagreement over the Affordable Care Act. In 2018, about the border wall. And this one, I think there was a quote from someone from a right-leaning think tank saying that we are truly headed for the first ever shutdown about nothing. What exactly is the end game for the Matt Gaetz caucus in the House here? What exactly are they trying to accomplish? That's what the part that is unclear to me, because they clearly don't have a majority on their side for this issue. So are they just trying to have some sort of performative backlash to the mainstream of their party? Like, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me what exactly they're trying to accomplish with this.
Perhaps Gates is trying to, you know, entice Donald Trump into, obviously, they are close allies, and it's very likely that Trump would support anything that Gates would do or say, but maybe he's catering to the base. Maybe, you know, if I go back to the episode that Luke and I had, where we discussed the looming shutdown itself, talked about the history of it in our own way, we noted that every government shutdown for the past 30 years has been led by legislative Republicans. And B, if your goal is to prove that the government doesn't work or is fundamentally incapable of, you know, functioning, being the ones to force it to be incapable of functioning seems like a good way to accomplish your goal. It's the Eric Andre Hannibal Buress meme, right? Where Eric Andre shoots Hannibal and then he turns around and he's like, "Why would you do this?" Republicans are kind of doing that as well, right? The government sucks and it's incapable of protecting you. Why would the government do this to you? Ignoring the fact that they are the ones forcing the government to be ineffective by shutting it down. It reminds me of, I read a piece over from Politico a few weeks ago where Representative Mike Simpson, Republican from Idaho, a senior appropriator, was quoted as saying, "We always get the blame. Name one time that we've shut down the government and we haven't got the blame." That's a Hall of Fame level quote right there.
Really is, yeah.
"We shut down the government and we always get blamed for it. Name one time that hasn't happened." Like, oh, geez, Mike, who'd have thought? It's crazy how that works.
Yeah, it's like we seem to be noticing a trend here, right? It's I guess you're just picking up on that. You know, it is such a good quote. And encapsulates, you know, just the approach to this. And it's just, like you said, it kind of speaks to the larger Republican approach is just like, oh, the government doesn't work. And so often that is because they put a lot of time and effort into making it so that the government doesn't work, and making it so that there is gridlock and that the public sector is hollowed out of its funding, and that, you know, the safety net types of programs that that are funded through the federal government are not funded. And so I think if your goal is to make it seem like government doesn't work, your actions back that up and saying that, you know, we're trying to make it so that government doesn't work. I guess there is.
Keep electing me so I can keep making the government not work for you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Prove your worldview is accurate. Like
it's a great campaign slogan. Make sure the government does not work for you, you know?
And at the end of the day, this is a conversation I have with a lot of conservative people in my circle. We get to pick and choose who represents us in the government. You know, the regular folks, working class people, myself, I will never have a say in who's on the board of directors for a Fortune 500 company. So while these individuals in our government are attempting to privatize everything, usually because their friends and family are the ones in control of these private institutions, so they personally benefit from it, it's just kind of reinforcing, I don't even want to say a two-tiered system in America, because it's more like five tiers. You know, you have the ultra wealthy, you have the billionaire class who do whatever they want with no repercussions. Then you have it's the old joke about you have the multimillionaire television news broadcasters who are pushing a script written by the billionaires to tell the people, you know, the upper middle class and middle class people that the poor are the reasons that they're suffering, that everything in their life is getting worse and worse and worse, ignoring the fact that it's, you know, the billionaire scheme all along. They're essentially the puppeteers at the top of this pyramid. So if you're able to prove that by being the ones who are ineffective or inefficient in your role, and you're able to keep winning election after election after election, it shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone that these cycles perpetuate.
Yeah. And I just, you know, getting back to that story, the Washington Post story about the shutdown about nothing. I think, you know, going back through what has happened over the past few weeks, a number of occasions where Gates and the others on the far right have been changing their own demands. So at one point it's about cutting the safety net. At one point it's about not funding Ukraine. At one point it's about something else. So it all kind of feeds into that same line of thinking that, you know, that this trying to grind things down so that things don't work, and whether, you know, that is going to be reflected poorly upon Democrats who were wanting to make things function a little bit more smoothly,
or even function at all in this situation.
Function at all, yeah.
There were some other really fun quotes. Kevin McCarthy, he got a little animated last night afterwards when discussing the averted shutdown, saying, "I want to be the adult in the room. Go ahead and try," referring, of course, to Gates' motion to oust him as speaker. "And you know what? If I have to risk my job for standing up for the American public, I will do that." So it's getting contentious in Capitol Hill. This is a story that will continue developing over the next couple days and weeks as we get to the potential shutdown in November, but we will be here to cover it. This is Town Call, joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area Today. If you'd like to participate in the forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. We got one more segment for you on this Tuesday afternoon. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Wisconsin is facing an unprecedented threat, a constitutional crisis that would overrule the votes of nearly 2 million Wisconsinites who voted in the state Supreme Court election this past April. It's a threat made by some extremist Republicans who are desperate to overturn a fair and democratic election so they can hold on to power. Instead of focusing on the issues we really care about, they are threatening to illegally impeach Justice Janet Protasiewicz without evidence before she's even ruled on a single case. Removing Justice Janet Protasiewicz from office would threaten our democracy and overrule the will of the people. But it's not too late to protect your vote and stand up for the rule of law. Tell your state legislators not to overturn the results of an election. Tell them to oppose the illegal impeachment of Justice Janet Protasiewicz. Contact your state legislators at 1-800-362-9472, then visit defendjustice.us to learn more about how you can help stop the illegal impeachment of Justice Janet. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together Incorporated.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. He shouldn't even have BLTs. They're a terrible sandwich.
Oh, I love BLTs.
Like so do one, I.
The one deli sandwich I could have.
Greg, don't yuck my yum, dude. I will.
We've already established on this show today that Greg is happy to judge people's yums.
Bring me your yums, for I am the yum judge.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Brock. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Lots of sunshine this afternoon with a high of 85. Winds out of the south, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows around 65. Tonight, cloudy skies. Overcast again tomorrow. Chance for scattered storms, 77. Chance for scattered rain showers Thursday and Friday. Low 70s Thursday, mid-50s by Friday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Hite. Currently, it's 79 degrees.
Your home for the Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. Joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area, we are talking the averted government shutdown today. The big story of the past weekend as the September 30th into October 1st deadline for the new fiscal budget. And Dan, something that we've kind of touched on but haven't really given the raw numbers on, I just wanted to kind of contextualize why this shutdown mattered. Averting a shutdown has major ramifications, not only for government operations, but for the lives of hundreds of thousands of Americans, including ensuring military service members are paid, ensuring that no federal workers will be furloughed. The food assistance programs will continue uninterrupted. National parks will remain open. Travel will not be impacted. This would have made a difference in your day-to-day life. You may not have noticed it immediately over the first couple of days, but as the weeks or months, even as we saw with this Trump shutdown in 2018, started to add up, this would have a direct impact on, I'd say, millions of American people's lives. And I got a quote from President Joe Biden after he signed it. I just signed a law to keep the government open for 47 days. 45-day continuing resolution, but Biden was adding the two additional days at the beginning. There's plenty of time to pass government funding bills for the next fiscal year. I strongly urge Congress to get to work right away. The American people expect their government to work. Let's make sure it does. This continuing resolution, which was passed by both the House and the Senate by wide margins earlier in the day on Saturday, will continue funding the government at its current spending levels into mid-November. And it does include $16 billion in disaster relief. However, there is no aid for Ukraine or changes to border policy. But ahead of the vote, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer reiterated the Senate's commitment to providing additional aid for Ukraine, saying he and Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who has championed funding for the country, have agreed to continue fighting for more economic and security aid for Ukraine. But that would be something that we're likely to look into as the 45-day window ends and the November budget comes calling. Matt Gaetz will not be excited about that, as he went out of his way, of course, to deny additional funding to Ukraine. But there was one little piece I wanted to note, a weird story that gained some traction on Twitter in regards to a fire alarm that you might have heard about. And this was quite literally the fire alarm pulled by Democratic Rep. Jamal Bowman as he pulled an alarm in the House office building on Saturday. And a statement, a spokesperson for the Democrats said Congressman Bowman did not realize he would trigger a building alarm as he was rushing to make an urgent vote. The congressman regrets any confusion. He later told reporters, "I thought the alarm would open the door." Republicans have suggested that the act may have been done intentionally, as the alarm was pulled at a time when Democrats were trying to delay a House vote in order to read the legislation introduced by Republicans and ensure they found it acceptable. This entire saga is just ridiculous to me, Dan, because if you're going to provide a 71-page piece of legislation and expect individuals to not only read it, but be prepared to vote on it in 5, 10, 30 minutes, that in and of itself is absurd. And it kind of forces people into ridiculous situations where they might have to pull a fire alarm to buy more time, but that's unacceptable as well. Like, it's just, it seems everybody here's a loser. This is weird, man. Politics in America, it's a different ballgame.
Yeah, I think Bowman pretty clearly made a mistake here. There's some of his explanations that his office has put out since this happened was, I don't know. I don't think they really explained away, gave a great explanation to why he did what he did. You know, seems like a pretty clear mistake that he should just kind of own up to and apologize for. And maybe people would understand if you know, he just was okay with making a mistake. The explanations sometimes I think it's one of those cases where the explanation is worse than the actual act in a lot of ways. So definitely a weird one. You know, if a Republican did this, we'd be crying foul too. So I think it's important to, you know, bring some accountability to somebody who pretty clearly made a mistake here.
Yep. And I agree with you completely. If you, if in the get-go, Jamal Bowman just said, yep, I messed up, I made a mistake, I apologize and move on. It's the Streisand effect, right? By lying or making additional, here's what happened, here's what I was trying to do type excuses, you're just drawing more attention to the incident itself. And Dan, before we get to the end of today's excellent episode of Town Call, I know there was something that you wanted to touch on. You've been very, very keen to noting the scheduling of public hearings in the state of Wisconsin, following along very closely with everything that goes on here in the state. Would you care to share with the audience what you found?
Yeah, there are a couple anti-trans bills that Republicans are introducing, a ban on trans athletes and a ban on gender-affirming care for people under 18. Republicans have really been monkeying around with the time of the public hearings for these, I think, to try to prevent public testimony in these public hearings on the bills. But the bills are tomorrow, Wednesday, October 4th. The public hearings will begin at 9 a.m. There's a college athlete ban. There's a K-12 athlete ban for trans people. And I think the one there, it is at noon, ban on trans medical care for people under 18. So these are clearly just the type of anti-trans, you know, dog whistle type bills that Republicans push. And I think it's going to be really important for people to show up and share their testimony and how important it is for people to access this type of care. And regardless of where you stand on your understanding or acceptance of trans issues, transitioning is a personal decision, and it should not be the government having a say in those personal medical decisions.
I agree 100%.
If you are somebody who is passionate about this issue, I think you should do what you can to show up and make your voice heard at the Capitol tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Let people live their lives. I don't understand why that's such a complex idea, especially from individuals who spent the entirety of the pandemic preaching, you know, my body, my choice type deal. We can make the same argument in regards to abortion access and healthcare, right? Let women have autonomy over their own body. Let them make these decisions. Let trans people have autonomy over their own body. Let them make these decisions. Stop getting the government involved. Stop getting your religious opinions involved. Let people live their lives. And that's interesting, Dan, that you noted the monkeying around with the schedule, because as we talk about frequently, organizing against or organizing for or against popular issues matters. And it's very, very hard to get people on the same schedule if you are passionate about these issues to come and speak publicly about them, if you're not finding out about this time of the hearing until, you know, the day before. Hey, can you take off work tomorrow to be there at 9 a.m.? Like, that's difficult for a lot of people. But thank you so much for joining us today, Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. We'll be recombobulating all week with Dan. It's going to be a very, very fun week. And we have a very, very special guest coming on the show on Friday. You're not going to want to miss that. Thanks for joining us today, Dan. Always good to have you here. Take it easy, party people.
Thanks so much.
We will talk to you tomorrow.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season,
to mastering those retrieval skills season, from clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season, and of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it, because we have it all. Fleet Farm, built for real life.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.